Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's March 24th, 2007. I'm Harley Schlanger and I'll be your host today. Well, we now know what that giant sucking sound you've been hearing from Washington, D.C. this week was. It was Big Al Gore who returned to once again suck the life out of the Democratic Party. The public side of his return reads like a Hollywood script. The once rejected Gore has reemerged, reinventing himself as a true people's hero, basking in the glow of an Oscar, strutting confidently across the Congress and over some of the bodies of the Congress to win over the doubters by asserting that there's an indisputable scientific consensus backing him up, that we face doom from global warming unless we come over to the gospel according to Al. The reality, as you'll see this afternoon, is really quite different. What was on display in Washington, D.C., and literally worldwide, as he's on his Gorical world tour, was the worst side of racism, that which comes from the British Empire, the so-called race science used to justify a new colonial empire with a policy of genocide against the people of the Southern Hemisphere. Under Lyndon LaRouche's direction, we've compiled the true history of Al Gore, the fascist steeped in the hardcore anti-science racism of Lord Bertrand Russell, the Southern fried fascist who is continuing the dreams of Julian Huxley to impose eugenics, also known as race science, as ecology and conservation. There's more. Gore's personal role in killings in Africa through the World Wildlife Fund and as vice president. His efforts, a la Lynn Cheney, to silence any real scientist who might venture forth with the real inconvenient truth that his so-called scientific consensus is nothing but a fraud. And his greedy efforts to accumulate a fortune through opening up a new speculative bubble for Wall Street in the so-called carbon swaps. You can find this expose on the LaRouchePact.com website under the heading Destroy Al Gore. And this will be our topic today on the LaRouche Show. Joining me will be EIR editor and researcher extraordinaire Michelle Steinberg. We'll also be joined by LIM members Pavel Penev from the War Room and by Kalina Hemphill from the nation's capital. So, Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hi, Harley. Great to be here.
Now, you've been finishing this feature for the Executive Intelligence Review on the real Al Gore. Can you give us a preview of what will be in it?
Sure. This is actually a project of our colleagues in the LaRouche Youth Movement who have been running for the last year a part of our organization, which is called the War Room. And what the War Room is the political center of how we are deploying for the policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the American system that lived today through Lyndon LaRouche, and also to free the population from the massive brainwashing that's going on. And we knew from last week that Lyndon LaRouche was writing an article to go at the heart of the pessimism and irrationality that dominates the baby boomer thinking. And it really is irrational. It really is insane. And how that's going to destroy, really, the planet for the next 2, 3, 4 generations. So it's no accident that the LaRouche Youth Movement, who began as the No Future generation before they came into being and now really represent the only future for the planet, took up the challenge and have brought science to bear against Al Gore's scientific hoax. And it's not Gore's hoax. The first thing that the EIR package is going to do following Mr. LaRouche's article, which is called tentatively Fascism as an Algorithm, because he's really going to show that the Nazi irrationalism, because remember, National Socialism, Fascism, and Nazism swept the planet in the late 1920s and 1930s, really early 1920s, with Mussolini in Italy, Franco in Spain, Hitler in Germany. the Vichy France that capitulated under the Nazi invasion. And even in the United States, had it not been for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, we would have had been living under Nazism here. And that irrationality, born of the pessimism, the cultural pessimism after World War One and the events that followed, a series of assassinations, including of American leaders like William McKinley and Abraham Lincoln. The long-term effects of that brought in a pessimism and a darkness to the 20th century culture that fascism, the child of the financiers and the oligarchy, was the logical outcome of. So that's what LaRouche is going to be talking about in that long wave of history. And we also have the scientific evidence all over the place. So Lynn takes off on this very brilliant documentary that was produced by a faction in Europe, primarily Britain, but it's also manifested itself in Denmark over the last week, that is fighting the insanity of this green fascism. And they produced a documentary which is called The Great Global Warming Swindle. And Pavel can talk more about the scientists and the LaRouche Youth Movement's use of the scientific work that time after time after time has disproved every single allegation in the Gore global warming hoax and in his movie, The Inconvenient Truth.
Okay, you're listening to Michelle Steinberg on The LaRouche Show. We're discussing the fraud also known as Al Gore. Now, Michelle, you said something I think we are going to talk about a lot on this show, that Al Gore is not the inventor of this global warming theory. You know, Gore's taken credit for the Internet. He's taken credit for a lot of things. What precisely, let's get into this a little bit, where this came from and also what Gore's role is in this. So why don't you pick up on this question of where environmentalism in the 20th century came from.
Okay, back to the EIR. There's going to be an article by Anton Chaykin, who everybody knows as a longtime author of for EIR, author of the unauthorized biography of George Bush and family, which is British Genocide from Thatcher to Gore. And he focuses on the fact that in its present incarnation, for example, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which is dictating the carbon emissions caps and all of this nonsense to the world. Is that liberal? Did that come from Al Gore and the liberals? No, it came from the top British warmonger, author of the first Gulf War, Maggie Thatcher, and her advisor, Sir Crispin Tickle, whose most famous quote is, "Mankind is a disease." And Tickle was, he went to a lot of schools, educated in Britain, but also in Harvard University. He became an environmentalist and in the tradition of Thomas Malthus. So if you really want to go way back, we've got to be talking about the British East India Company and Malthus's idea that that human beings should be culled like animal herds are. This was picked up by none other than Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth and father of Prince Charles. The whole family are a bunch of genocidalists, along with his partner, Prince Bernhard, a Nazi, actually a card-carrying Nazi, who in 1961-62, Bernhard and Philip got together to create the World Wildlife Fund to push extermination of human beings. So really, Al Gore is, Big Al is nothing but a latecomer. He didn't write his book on this until 1991-92, 30 years after Bernhard and Philip set out their plans in the World Wildlife Fund to exterminate populations in Africa.
So Michelle, let me just
take a breath,
pull a couple things together here.
Yeah.
So essentially you've identified two trends, which really are one trend in the longer historical period. One is that of the British Empire, the new form of colonialism that was introduced by the British after the Treaty of Paris in 1763. And then connected to that is the anti-human policy, which we see in the 20th century associated with Lord Bertrand Russell, which Gore picks up. Is that basically accurate?
Exactly. And we'll be going through this in, you know, detail, graphs, photographs, etc., between Anton Chaikin and LIM leader Rob Ainsworth from Canada. He'll also be contributing to that part of the package. The second thing, Harley, I wanted to say about this latest global warming hoax is that it was launched out of thin air at the Academy Awards. No one was paying much attention to it before that. And it is a gigantic financial swindle now that the housing bubble has collapsed and some of the other derivatives are bottoming out, et cetera. The yen carry trade has gone under. We're facing, and we're in the middle of a financial collapse. They need a new bubble. And that new bubble is called carbon swaps and carbon exchanges, which Richard Freeman and Marcia Mary Baker have some really dynamite stuff that they go through on these hedge funds.
I also have seen a very interesting cartoon that we've produced on the carbon swaps. We'll get to that a little bit later when we bring in Kalina, who had a very interesting encounter with Mrs. Al Gore. So the carbon swap issue is certainly one which, if it weren't for the seriousness of this, you'd just have to laugh at it. This goes back to Kissinger's National Security Study Memo 200, right, where he says the Third World cannot develop its own resources.
That's right, where he describes any nation in the Third World that has a population increase that is not kind of pre-approved by the Anglo-Dutch primus inter pares side of the oligarchy, that country is a national security threat to the United States. That's how the Anglo-Americans look at Africa.
All right. So we have these two trends in this long arc coming together. Now, to me, one of the most interesting aspects of the package that you described to me earlier is that what we're discovering now is that, again, Gore is a plagiarist, only he's plagiarizing directly from the Nazis. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, let me start with a really interesting story. And anybody who wants to comment or ask me a question about this, there is an email that we can pick up on. Isn't there, Harley?
Yeah, let me give that out. You can tell Michelle is a former host on this show, so she knows the
And I know everybody listening doesn't agree with me, so let's
hear it. Get in your questions. Let's get Michelle going here. Send us your emails at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio, R-A-D-I-O, at larouchepub, LAROUCHEPUB.com. Send in your emails and questions and comments. And by the way, that's also where you can go to pick up the archive of the LaRouche Show. It's on that website, on larouchepub.com. So now that we maybe are getting some people to race to their computers, Michelle, go ahead.
Okay, and I do have a couple of secret weapons that if we get some really tough questions, that's Kalina and Pavel. But the issue is how green were the Nazis? And that's the title of a very interesting new book, How Green Were the Nazis, by a professor at the University of Freiburg, Germany, Franz Josef, excuse my pronunciation, Brueggemeier, Brueggemeier, I-E-R, sorry. And a second book called The Green and the Brown, The History of Conservation in Nazi Germany, by Frank Uketer. And this is a story which we in the LaRouche movement really have written about since the 1970s, because one of the things that LaRouche founded our political movement on is an understanding of the economic and cultural roots of Hitler and the Nazis to make sure that this scourge could never take root on the planet again.
But in fact, he was writing it against the tendency in the New Left, the so-called 68ers, which went precisely back to the Nazis.
Exactly. And one of the things that shook the 68ers up when we were organizing in the 1970s was to point out that the Woodstock counterculture operations had its roots in the Romantic movement known as the Wandervogel. Right, where these young Germans were encouraged in what became the real Nazi hardcore ideology to purify themselves by going back to nature. And, you know, you look at the hootenannies and the pictures, the photos of these hikers playing guitars in the woods and in the forests, and it looks like very much like the Woodstock crowd. And that was a eye-opener to honest intellectuals among the student population of 68 to 1970-71, say, holy mackerel, we're being used. Hey, we're being used against classical culture to be exactly what the Nazi youth were encouraged to do and then picked up and turned and used as pawns in a dictatorship. So, you know, LaRouche really understood Schachtian economics and has dedicated his life to fighting Jean-Marc Schacht's and Hitler's economics. And everything people might have heard to the opposite, boy, they don't know their history.
Well, in particular, what you had with this theory, this eugenics theory, this purifying the race theory, is the idea that there are some people who have a more intrinsic right than others to live. And those who are not part of the chosen, in fact, can be eliminated. And this is exactly what we see with Al Gore's policy towards Africa, which I want to get to before we bring on Pavel and Kalina.
Let me just read you a little excerpt going back to how green were the Nazis. Not from that, but on a similar theme. This is a small piece of the upcoming EIR. The title is That Hitler in Your Garden? No, that's Al Gore. When Al Gore was vice president, living at the mansion in the park of the U.S. Naval Observatory, he embarked on a project to restore the grounds, especially the gardens and the forest. An article describing this project at the time Gore was running for president stated, Gore restored the rich diversity and lush beauty of his own backyard by yanking out foreign exotica in favor of native plants. Treating plants as if they are unwanted foreigners from the, quote, mixed races of the South, unquote, or other unwanted immigrants under orders from Gore. The gardeners dug out all exotic plants, including such invasive immigrants as English ivy, garlic mustard from Europe, and kudzu from Japan.
Well, you can't have those oriental plants in Al Gore's garden.
Well, it turns out that Gore's interest in gardens comes from the same fascist roots as his lying CO2 campaign, a campaign that would make Joseph Goebbels blush. And then it goes through the fact that several professors in Germany have exposed that the trend toward ecological goodness, nature gardens, and ecological gardens free of foreign exotica has its roots deep in blood and soil romanticism that became the ideological foundation of the Nazi movement. This people do not want to miss. They do not want to miss this package in EIR, and that's just a small excerpt.
Well, to get that, people can call us at the EIR number, which is 800-278-3135. And if you say you heard about this on the LaRouche Show, we will send you a copy of the EIR with the material Michelle has been describing. That's 800-278-3135. Now, I'd like to, at this point, bring in Pavel, who has been in the war room for the last weeks and is part of the team that's coordinating actually a two-pronged offensive here. On the one side, pulling together the intelligence but as a war room, understanding that the intelligence and then the operations are one and the same, so coordinating the deployment of the LaRouche Youth Movement to expose the fraud of Gore and bring back real science. So, Pavel, welcome to the program.
Hello, Harley.
Why don't you give us a little report on what you've pulled together for the EIR?
Well, as it seems, this is what LaRouche remarked, that Democrats that are posing with Gore are on their way to one of their greatest political suicide in recent time. And what we also found out by organizing people in the streets throughout the United States, in Europe, and meeting people from various institutions is that human beings are not actually apes, and they're not governed by the kind of ideology that is being promoted in terms of global warming right now, and that instead what people are very concerned about is what LaRouche has been talking about. For example, we had some fellows in Boston where there are a lot of financiers and especially some people from the mortgage business who just in the past few weeks, some of them started coming to the LaRouche PAC organizers in the street trying to donate money to us, you know, asking us how much they can donate and wanting to find out what's the latest assessment from LaRouche and what he's proposing. Because as this whole global warming swindle was being pushed by Al Gore and his pack, what was happening is you had the whole carry trade and the whole mortgage bubble unwinding, and you had major mortgage lenders going bankrupt. You also, we talked to people in Detroit, and they actually stopped to talk to us at our saying, "Do you know that Al Gore is changing the subject?" Because this is a part of the country that has been economically devastated by such things as the collapse of the auto industry, that LaRouche put forward a proposal to employ for the purposes of rebuilding the U.S. infrastructure and the whole U.S. economy, and that Congress still hasn't acted on. So, and especially from there's an important distinction that we've been finding out. This is something that LaRouche has referred to in terms of the different generations, because what we found out is that from many of the many of those aged above, say, around 35, what we found out is their response to our exposing of the scientific fraud and the impact of those environmentalist policies on populations around the world was one of rage. You know, we had a fellow turned one of our tables over. And generally the kind of arguments we got is we had someone at a rally in Washington D.C. Tell us that we should really deindustrialize and start wearing loincloths, and he admitted that he doesn't really think that global warming is mainly caused by human activity, but he obviously had a different reason for wanting those policies.
Pavel, the thought of Al Gore in a loincloth is a little frightening. But, you know, when you talk about the way that we're taking this campaign out and we're finding that people are not just blindly going with it, there were two things from the Boston Report this morning that I think were quite interesting. One, when we were trying to ask questions at this rally or this meeting that was trying to build support for Al Gore, and we were accused of being rude, and one of our organizers said, would it have been rude to disrupt the Nuremberg rally? And that's part of the way to approach this. I think the other thing is that on this question of changing the subject, when all these impotent would-be liberals were sitting around talking about how bad things were, one of our organizers said, things are going to get a lot worse if we don't get rid of this administration. Why aren't you trying to impeach Cheney instead of following under the loincloth of Al Gore? So I think this question of that kind of polemical thrust, you've seen that, and you've found from the reading the reports and talking to the organizers, it's been effective, right?
Yeah, sure. Especially young people, they don't. Young people have the challenge because many of them find that they don't exactly find a reason to trust what either the various supposed political leaders posing right now, or the supposed intellectual leaders at many universities. The young people often find it hard to discover any reason to actually trust them on what they're saying. And it's interesting because there's one of these hype networks that's called Focus the Nation, which is headed by two fellows who came out of Middlebury College from connected to the Roatan Center there. This network is called Focus the Nation. The email membership received an email asking them asking them what their response is to this Channel 4 movie, The Great Global Warming Swindle, as well as an article written by Zbigniew Jaworowski that exposes the scientific fraud, and also a LaRouche Pack leaflet titled True CO2 Record Buried Under Gore. And the response to that was, the heads of that, they tried to say, we don't allow such unsolicited material here. You can't, you know.
Especially if it contradicts our lies.
Right. But what happened is a lot of the membership, they actually, there was discussion that was started, and there was people who actually wanted to know what's going on.
Pavel, we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll come back for more on that, because this is really getting at the heart of things. The effort to stifle debate by saying the issue is settled is part of what Gore is doing. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. This is the show for Saturday, March 24th, 2007, and we're discussing the Al Gore swindle, the inconvenient fascist, Al Gore. If you want to listen to this show again, or you want to get your friends to listen to it, you can find it on the LaRouchePub.com website. On the left-hand side, look for The LaRouche Show, and you can log on there and hear this show or any of our past shows. The last 4 weeks, in fact, we've taken up the question of the fraud of global warming. We've had Larry Hecht on, who wrote that leaflet that Pavel just mentioned, as well as other people who have been working on the science, the real science of global warming, as opposed to the fraud from Gore. Now, also, as I mentioned earlier, the next EIR is going to be an absolutely essential organizing tool for people. You can call us at 800-278-3135 to get a copy. And while you're doing that, you should subscribe either to the EIR weekly publication, or you can get it online weekly. So that's 1-800-278-3135. Now, also, we have the implications of the Gore hoax, which is the webcast from Lyndon LaRouche on March 7th, and that can be picked up by calling LaRouche PAC 800-929-7566. I'll give you those numbers again later before we conclude, but I'd like now to bring on someone who's new to the show, who's been working in Washington, D.C. with the LaRouche youth movement there, who's from California originally, Kalina Hemphill, who can tell us a little bit about what we've been doing to stir things up in Washington, where Al Gore made his less than triumphant return this week. Kalina, why don't you give us a report on what you've been up to?
Yeah, we've actually been having a lot of fun here in D.C. Pavel kind of hit on a little bit of the insanity that's been kind of stymieing the ability for the Congress to think rationally lately. As a precursor to this week, there was an anti-war rally, march on the Pentagon, pretty much anti-administration, that we deployed to specifically to bring up this idea of Al Gore. And what we found was a very mixed reaction. We had a lot of youth and younger tweener-aged people coming up and having discussions, really questioning the motives behind global warming. And what we saw from the older generations, your boomers and your maybe World War II generation, was complete vicious, violent reaction to what we had to say. There was no room whatsoever for any discussion. And that really reminded us yet again what we're up against. In D.C. particularly, we have a baby boomer-controlled Congress. So looking at this week's events, the hype of Al Gore, his visit to the Hill on Wednesday, we really went into a mini week of action mode with the premise of saturating this city with the hoax of Al Gore. And we took it in a number of different ways. We obviously centered on Congress, but we also hit a number of campuses and the population in general. I'll come back to the Congress, which is probably most important, but start off with what we did on the campuses. Tonight we'll be having a class led by Bruce Director. Obviously, I think people know a little bit about him. He's been in our organization for 30 years or more and done a lot of the scientific work. Tonight he'll be giving a class specifically on this global warming hoax with a larger slant towards why LaRouche is always right and everybody's wrong. But we've been getting into a number of discussions with people on the campuses around this idea of global warming. And the responses, like I said from before, from the youth have been very good. They're not sold on the global warming hoax. They are ready to question the science. But really what they're more focused on is the economic implications behind it.
Well, Kalina, would you say, I mean, one of the points Lyndon LaRouche has been hammering at is that the boomer generation has given up on the future. There's no idea of the future. It's now, me, 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 now, now, now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the youth are stuck in a situation where unless there's going to be a future, or if there's going to be a future, it has to be organized by the youth. Do you think that accurately describes what you're finding?
Yeah, you know, that's the idea that LaRouche and the youth movement has really been pursuing. You see a direct attack on that when you look at the Senate hearing. That's at least the one that we were able to get into that Gore gave on Wednesday. He specifically brought up how, I don't know if it was him or his global warming lover, Barbara Boxer, who brought up the idea that the youth are apathetic to politics, and this really gives them something tangible, that they feel that they can make a contribution by fighting this global warming crisis. It's really disgusting if you look at it. So, we've been getting into a lot of discussions that way on how if people want to be a historical individual, first of foremost, they need to do the background work on where a lot of these people come from. Michelle brought up, you know, the British Anglo-Dutch liberal background, you know, from Thatcher to Gore, things like that. There was a specific discussion that we had that was interesting on GW campus. George Washington University is a particularly tough campus to crack sometimes because you have a lot of these aristocratic students who are ready to be bred for policy making positions, and they don't often want to stop. At the Starbucks on the campus, there was a book signing being given by this former boy soldier. I don't know his last name, but his first name is Ishmael. Starbucks is promoting this book pretty heavily about how, you know, he worked his way out of Sierra Leone, actually got an education, and how he's trying to fight against the lack of development in Africa. And we had an organizer have a pretty intense discussion with him specifically on the, you know, British background and how that's really stymied any efforts in Africa for economic development. He responded extremely well to this. He was really excited about the idea, first and foremost, that there are people, especially youth, who know their homework and really know what's behind the destruction of Africa. And that led into a discussion, really, on what's been going on lately with Gore.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kalina, before we move on, I want to hear about your encounter with Mrs. Al Gore, a.k.a. Tipper. I understand she was not too amused by the cartoon that we have produced.
Yeah, you mentioned the cartoon. It's on the website. There's a couple of different ones. The one that we specifically hit with was Al Gore throwing Tipper out the window. And in the next frame, he has carbon swapped her for a lump of coal, which he has become very friendly with, to put it mildly.
Yeah, this is a family show, but it's a nice, almost X-rated cartoon. But that's partly because you see flabby Al Gore, but
yes.
You have to go on the website to see it.
So we were in his hearing, and I took the initiative to fold up the cartoon and write a little note to Tipper specifically saying, paraphrasing, your husband's policies mean genocide for the third world. And with a little side note to the fact that they should start using that indoor heated pool of theirs because, you know, their waistlines are growing at an exorbitant rate. I actually, you know, I passed it off to her, and her reaction was that which to be expected. She was obviously upset. She started passing it around to a bunch of her friends that were sitting. And, you know, as she was coming out of the hearing, you know, her reaction was specifically, what's wrong with you people? When posed with the question, what's wrong with your husband's policies?
Interesting, isn't it? Her husband is pushing policies that will kill off large numbers of people in Africa, and she asks, what's wrong with us?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a little bit of a testy hearing. You had pretty much an entirety of the Democrats siding with this global warming swindle and fawning over Al Gore. Mm-hmm. Senator Inhofe really kind of gave him a run for his money, specifically pointing to his personal energy use. It's been, you know, splashed in the tabloids that his, you know, average monthly energy use is around the average American's yearly energy use. And, you know, he really pushed him specifically on whether or not he's going to put his money where his mouth is and change his policies first and foremost. And I think there was specific mention made that on the panel that I don't think Tipper would like that. And that really infuriated her.
You know, I think just to, we have about 20 minutes left, and I want to make sure we get a few more things out. But, again, people should go to the website, LaRouche PAC website, there's a section that's headed at the bottom of the page. It says Destroy Al Gore, and it includes a lot of the files, the background material, and I think somewhere on there you can find these cartoons. And we have it now from Kalina that Tipper was not amused. Now, Michelle, let me bring it back to the Africa question, because this is something that Lyndon LaRouche emphasized in his discussions the last couple of days, that this is not some side effect, but this is actually the real policy of Gore and his Russellite backers. What can you tell us on that?
Well, let me start with Gore personally, because he personally is a racist. Not like his daddy necessarily. Al Gore Jr. was tried every which way to sabotage civil rights movement, especially around the Civil Rights Act during the 1950s and 60s.
Al Gore Sr., you mean?
Al Gore Sr.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Al Gore Jr. continued that in the 2000 campaign, where he disenfranchised a lot of African-American voters, especially Lyndon LaRouche's supporters in Arkansas in particular. But more than that, Al Gore's specialty was killing Africans. And I want to tell you a little anecdote about his own role in this. And then the true story behind the fall of the House of Windsor, which goes back to the World Wildlife Fund and Prince Bernhard and Prince Philip, which really sponsored the population theories that are in Earth in the Balance. But what Al Gore did when he was vice president, he was the head of a very important commission between the United States and South Africa, which it wasn't so long before that apartheid had been ended in South Africa, and they were really trying to get on their feet after years of Anglo-Dutch domination, oppression, and the worst kind of exploitation. And Al Gore, as vice president, delivered a personal threat to President Thabo Mbeki, who was trying desperately to do something about the AIDS epidemic. You know, there's more AIDS orphans in the southern part of Africa than probably in most of the rest of the world combined. And anything that can be done to prolong the life of the mothers and fathers of those children was crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Becky was faced with a condition of how do you expect AIDS sufferers, HIV sufferers in South Africa to pay hundreds of dollars, $600 a month for cocktails, pharmaceutical cocktails to prolong their lives. So he wanted to do what was natural and produce the same kind of drugs invented by their own physicians and researchers generically. And Gore delivered the threat, you do this and we will boycott your country. Your country will go on the same list as Saddam Hussein, basically.
So it was Gore intervening on behalf of the pharmaceutical cartels to kill people in Africa.
That's right. And it's no accident that two of his business partners, Maurice Strong of Canada, who is a notorious character, we'll get to him probably in a future show, and Peter Knight, who now runs one of the hedge funds which is pushing the carbon caps, laws to cap carbon emissions so that these financier speculators can sell the allowances to the super rich. Peter Knight was the lead lobbyist for the Pharmaceutical Association while Gore was pushing this policy. Peter Knight's a long time collaborator with Gore in the global warming issue, in the hedge fund issue, and politically.
And we have, I mean, this is pinned down factual documentation of Gore's involvement on this.
That's right. The LIM is pulling together a special page on the LaRouche PAC website. That's www.larouchepac.com. There'll be a special page on Al Gore, which documents all of these things from the past. Now, the other side of...
Let's get to the beloved World Wildlife Fund.
Yeah, World Wildlife Fund. Basically, what you had was in... the 1992 period, Prince Bernhard donated 500,000 British pounds to the World Wildlife Fund and through a Swiss bank, and then found that it was necessary to have that money returned because he had to use it for training mercenary armies on the wildlife preserves in Africa. Now, we put this out in the Windsor Report that there's these huge, huge, huge swaths of land in Africa where that are under the control of no government. And what happened was in these preserves, there were killers trained, and these were the mercenary armies who stalked and murdered the African National Congress leaders and other African independence movements with funds laundered by Prince Bernhard through these World Wildlife Fund accounts. It was called Operation Lock. In one incident in 1992, 45 ANC leaders were killed. It was called Operation Lock. It was the right-wing death squad parallel to the notorious fascist Operation Condor in South America. This is what Bernhard and Philip were running on their preserves. This is what Al Gore was collaborating with all his political life.
Hmm. Well, Michelle, we have a question here from on the emails, and my system just crashed, so I think it's from Canada. But there's two questions. One is, who are these oligarchies we're talking about? Can they be identified? And then secondly, that instead of, this person writes that he doesn't think that they started the global warming swindle, they're just trying to make money on it. And that's, of course, one of the arguments you hear. So could you answer the two questions? Who are these oligarchies and the argument that they're really not the ones who created it?
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope we can be in continuous dialogue with this questioner because this is not a soundbite answer, as you can you can imagine. And this is what Rob Ainsworth and Anton Chaikin have been working for the better part of the week. You got World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz praising carbon trading, claiming it's going to generate as much as $200 billion, which can go into the speculative market. Now, who are these oligarchs? Well, in 1961, and if you don't think that Prince Philip and Prince Bernhard are oligarchs, I have to ask the questioner, what's an oligarch? I mean, these are the European families that have been in power for centuries who believe that only 5% of the human race count.
Yeah, this is not exactly a metaphorical oligarch.
Yeah. So
it's funny, too, Michelle. It's funny. I'll be going over this in my briefing tonight, actually. I mean, if people want a literal viewing of the Anglo-Dutch, you know, oligarchy, as Lynn always puts it, you have Prince Bernhard, who represents the Dutch side, and Prince Philip, who obviously represents the Anglo side. It couldn't be any clearer than that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there will be classes on this. There, hopefully, Kalina's class briefing will be posted on the website. Now, the other thing I want to say in answer to part two, Sir Nicholas Stern. Sir Nicholas Stern was hired by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, and by Tony Blair to do a study on climate change and global warming, and then that report has been being used as the total consensus document, the consensus sledgehammer, to be used to in coordination, I should say, in full coordination with Jeffrey Skoll, the eBay billionaire, who now heads the hedge fund Capricorn, not to mention Capricorn Partnership Productions, which...
Participant.
Participant, yeah. Productions, which made Gore's movie. You know, Skull, Gore, I mean, these guys are little, you know, American upstarts. Well, although Skull's a Canadian. But these are North American savages in the eyes of the European oligarchy. But Sir Nicholas Stern is the scientific sledgehammer which is being used by the oligarchy to push through the carbon laws so that they can make bundles and bundles of money. The questioner is absolutely right. This is a hedge fund swindle. Read about it in our next EIR.
It also, I know we've pulled together more material on the initiating role of Margaret Thatcher when she was prime minister, and then, of course, this was carried through seamlessly by Tony Blair. So it doesn't matter if you're Tory or Labour in Britain. It's the same imperial policy. We've got about 10 minutes. Let me get back to Pavel for a minute, because Michelle had mentioned that you put together this article, and I think we only got a brief glimpse into it. Is there something more that you want to give us in terms of how the LIM is taking the lead in exposing Gore and organizing people to come back to real science?
Well, one thing I would want to make clear is that the LaRouche Youth Movement is doing much more than that, because the what we've taken up, and that's why so many young people were so eager to work with us, because we've taken up working through the method of Johannes Kepler, how Johannes Kepler was able to discover the principle of gravity and create the foundation for modern science, how Johannes Sebastian Bach was able to discover a principle of composition. And this is the key question in that area, because the only reason why people get to believe in things like this whole global warming swindle is that there is no comprehension of science.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nowadays, if you go to a modern university, oftentimes you might even find people who talk about science at the same time they say they don't believe truth exists.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what the LaRouche Youth Movement has been working on, and I would say this is the only real solution to that challenge. And one thing that I want to bring up is something that this is something that happened at an event where a small chorus from the larger LaRouche Youth Movement chorus visited LaRouche and worked with him and also our choral director on voice training. This was about 2 weeks ago now, and LaRouche laid out what the challenge is for our generation now, and I'd like to read you a few excerpts from that.
This is the LaRouche show, so go ahead.
Okay, so this is what LaRouche says. Therefore, the way in which mankind perceives the lawful structure of the universe is by the principles which are otherwise expressed as contrapuntal composition. This is the faculty of the mind which is capable of not looking at science as looking into a cage from the outside, but looking at science from inside the cage, where you're the animal who's making it happen. So therefore, the question here is a question of science as well as art. It's a question of locating the question of personal identity as a creative person in those aspects of Bach and his successors which reflect the human mind at its highest level of performance. And you get that by trying to get your voice to conform to these kinds of requirements and compositions of choral work. You see it in the population. You see that there's a moral deficiency in the population, and morality is not a set of rules. It does involve principles. But morality is just this. It's the relationship between this role of music, which is typified by what you get in Kepler and so forth, this role, and that is the same thing as science, is when you have the unity of the personality. This is the identity of man as a creative creature, as no animal is. And it's this that brings us consciousness of what a human being really is, when you understand the unity of science and music in this way. Now you know what a human being is. Then your morality is to be human and to defend and to promote humanity. That's your imperative. So this is what it is all about, is to make you guys and others infectiously aware of what the essence of being human is, a human individual. And this relationship of something inside you, which is, you know, distinctly human, this ability to do music, choral music, that's the conscience. And to understand that, that's the same thing as physical science. Then you're integrated. Then you have a secure sense of personal identity, moral identity. Then you have the will to act as if by instinct. But you've got to know to have the confidence about being that person.
Well, that says a lot. I think that the only thing I could add to that is that we ought to present to Al Gore and to his wife a very well worked out canon, which is essentially with the headline, Al Gore is a fat ass, sung by four voices beautifully. So I think maybe we could get something across to him about the difference between a human being and a British imperial thug. Kalina, before we go, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, not particularly.
All right. So, Michelle, I guess we've got a little more than 3 minutes. If someone gets a hold of this, we've just gone through the tip of the iceberg on the material. There's an enormous amount that's available. And, again, I want to give the number 800-278-3135, and we'll give it once more before the end of the show. But what can people do to once they get the material, what kind of things should they do?
Well, first and foremost, subscribe to EIR Online. There's a special student rate on that. And get in touch with the LaRouche Youth Movement if you're between 18 and 27 years old. Don't go for this cynical boomer idea. What Kalina said about Boxer and Gore having this cynical idea about the apathy of the youth. Compare that to what Pavel just read from this conversation with Lyndon LaRouche. Why would youth trust boomers like Al Gore, who said, oh, the youth are so cynical, compared to us great 68ers? It's really pretty sickening.
Well, Michelle, it's also a complete lie, because the reason Barbara Boxer was heading that committee was something LaRouche calls the new politics.
There you go.
Which was the entrance onto the scene of a new generation of voters between 18 and 35 years old who rejected Bush and Cheney and the same kind of sophistry that Gore represents.
Yeah, so the LaRouche Youth Movement is highly active. We want people to help us distribute the literature, set up chapters on your campus. One of the initiatives being taken right now is to back up that production company that made the global warming swindle a film. Get it shown here in the United States. It's become an underground blockbuster on the internet.
So that's the British Channel 4 global warming swindle film, which includes scientists. So it shows the lie that Gore says that there's a lot that all scientists agree.
Yeah, the lunge that we go with actually on the street to promote the film is that there are no former vice presidents and no PowerPoint presentations, just cold hard facts.
Good.
And help us with the expose of these swindlers. One of the other pieces of this EIR is to show that Felix Rohatyn, from the famous synarchist, that is, Nazi tradition of Lazard Freres and Al Gore, are up to their eyeballs together in this, changing the subject, trying to subvert the Democratic Party to a dead end, no future. If people heard Al Gore, they heard him say, in 34 years, the polar ice cap is going to melt. It's going to melt. I felt like I was really watching one of those Godzilla movies from from my childhood.
The planet has a fever, according to Al Gore, but it's really that he's insane.
LaRouche has the real ecological answers to the planet. Join our movement.
Michelle, let me give that number again, 800-278-3135. Ask for the next issue of the EIR with the full story on the inconvenient fascist Al Gore. Thanks for joining us today on the LaRouche Show. Kalina, Pavel, and Michelle, thank you.
Thanks, Harley.
Thanks.
Thanks.